But right now, we have with us in a very important discussion, Edmund Kelly Silva Jr., who is the Alinui Moe, the High Chief or King of the Kingdom of Hawaii. And we'll be talking to him in just a moment or two about the situation in Hawaii, the struggle of the people in Hawaii. And this discussion we are having with Alinui Moe comes as a consequence of a September 20th meeting that I attended in Moscow. It was a meeting that was characterized as a dialogue of nations and the struggle for self-determination. It was attended by a number of peoples from around the world who are engaged in struggles for self-determination. That included people from Ukraine, people from the Polisario Front in the Western Sahara, in North Africa, people from the Irish Republican Socialist Party and the Republican Sinn Féin out of Ireland, people from Puerto Rico, from Hawaii, and I represented the African people at that conference as well. And while the Alinui Moe from the Kingdom of Hawaii was not himself there, his representative was there at that conference. And I thought it was an extremely important conference that Moscow was capable of hosting. It was hosted, actually, by the anti-globalization movement of Russia. And as most people know, Russia has become a significant player in the geopolitical scene of the world. And this conference was also designed to contend with the so-called unipolar world that's dominated by a singular force, and it was promoting the rise of a multipolar world where various interests of the peoples around the world could be represented and people would have an opportunity to speak for themselves. And as I mentioned earlier, there was an assortment of peoples there, and one of whom represented the Kingdom of Hawaii. And I'm really happy that we have now with us Edmund Kelly Silva Jr., who is the Alinui Moe of the Kingdom of Hawaii, which can be translated as the High Chief or King of the Kingdom of Hawaii. And I don't know whether you are prepared to talk about the Moscow conference or not, or whether we should simply go into a discussion of what the reality is in Hawaii and the struggle and history of struggle of the people of Hawaii.
Aloha kaka hiaka.
Aloha.
Good morning. Yes,
aloha.
I am. I'm very honored to speak about the Moscow meeting that my Ali Mananui, Lani Sinkin, attended, and he came back with a very good report of meeting many, many people of like mind who themselves are working diligently and faithfully to restoring their nations as well and looking for independence. And the report was good. I enjoyed the fact that the host there in Russia, in Moscow, was very attentive and very kind and very sincere in helping those who are struggling for the independence. And I thought it was good. So, yes, that I look forward to myself to going to Moscow one day soon. I have been invited to go back there to speak to them. Unfortunately, I've been here with my parents. I just recently lost my mother last month, and my dad is currently in the hospital. So we've been dealing with those issues. And it prohibited me from leaving Hawaii to go to Moscow to speak to the people there. Eventually, one day soon, I will. I also like to weigh in on the Paris situation, and my condolences and support to the government is there. The people have suffered gravely at the hands of those bent on causing mayhem and problems in a country that did not ask for it. Unfortunately, many countries don't ask for terrorism and problems to come. But when it does come, I'm always watching to see how the people there, and grateful to see how they come together. And when they come together, it warms my heart that they come together in solidarity to support those who have lost loved ones in senseless killings that happened there. You mentioned about Hawaii and our struggles here. That's a very lengthy discussion, I'll have you know. But the work is ongoing. It's a good work. The support of the people is growing more and more, and the support of other nations are growing as well. The issues of Hawaii is unlike any other country there, meaning that there's a lot of similarities in, you mentioned Puerto Rico and others, Africa and other nations. Everyone are now determined to be a nation unto themselves, because they feel that they can better serve each other culturally, in many respects, culturally and traditionally, as to who they themselves are. And I find that we as Hawaiians, the Kanaka Maoles, we understand the land, we understand our culture, we understand our tradition, we understand the people. And when you have those qualities, it makes for strength that is unlike others. Because when you understand what you have, then you move forward to a self-determination, knowing that you have an inherent right, an inalienable right, to live in the land that was gifted to you. Anyway, do you have any specific questions, sir?
Thank you. I want to thank you for that kind of introduction to this discussion. We'll be talking in the second segment of the show with some folk who probably have a different perspective on the French and Paris situation than what you've just expressed. But
yes,
the issue is that there are so many people who make an assumption that there is a natural relationship between the U.S., the government, state, and Hawaii and the people of Hawaii. There are so many people who were born into a situation where Hawaii was considered simply the 50th state of the United States and have no idea of the history of how Hawaii became connected to the United States, the means, the methods by which that was used, the legitimate historical leadership of Hawaii. And I think it would be important if you would share with our listeners just some of that history. How did the U.S. and Hawaii come to have the relationship that exists now? What is the history of that? What is the Hawaiian people? Who are you?
Well, thank you for the question. Again, that's a very lengthy, there'll be a lengthy discussion at some point. But my cousin, who was Queen Liliuokalani, was overthrown in 1893. And she didn't simply give up the throne just to say, here it is, without saying first that she temporarily is abdicating her throne. Which means that she was illegally and unlawfully overthrown. And who overthrew the kingdom? Well, these were a handful of businessmen. There were businessmen, attorneys, there were Christians, This is just the background who they were, and they loved the fact that the Hawaiian Islands soil was so rich in nutrients that their sugar cane, their pineapples, and many other things could grow very well, and it became Hawaii became a cash cow, if you will. And the issue of that I see in the kingdom being lost temporarily was simply over money, simply over controlling the natural resources of our Hawaiian Islands, its beauty, its location. When the United States came and overthrew the kingdom, they also saw ahead of time what it could do for them militarily. You have Pearl Harbor that houses the naval vessels, etc. You have now all the various branches of the military here stationed in the Hawaiian Islands. My people here have been bent and strongly in regaining our independence and telling the United States that they have no legal authority here. They have no legal authority simply because they're the occupiers of a nation that was simply stolen. When Hawaii was stolen, I want to say this to you listening in the audience, is that my people back then fired one shot. They didn't destroy any human lives, no Americans, nothing. There was no need for the military to even be here. No need for the military to intimidate the queen. No need for the military to intimidate the people. The queen simply approached things with the spirit of aloha. And she trusted then, who was President Grover Cleveland, to stand beside her in solidarity. I love that word. To stand beside her and to restore the nation. Well, he was ready to do that. Unfortunately, when he was leaving office, McKinley became the president, and he saw all the things that Hawaii would mean to the military of the United States and to the United States people as a whole. So being in the South Pacific Islands, away from the rest of the world, if you will, Hawaii has a direct line to Asia and different other places on the map. So today, I continue to work with the people, encouraging them to stand fast to imua, which means to move forward, to do so in a spirit of aloha, without violence, with care, with the spirit of aloha to move the nation forward. And case in point, today we have an issue with Ava Mauna Kea, Waikea, which is Mauna Kea Mountain. And it's a holy place. This is where the Hawaiian practitioners, the kahunas, would go and practice and pray and give thanks to Akua, God. And that place, that sacred place, has now been on the stage of the world because they want to put a huge telescope there, TMT. The people came together in solidarity, and all they did was link hands, chant, and sing. And they have gained tremendous support and respect all over the world because of their position of nonviolence approach. My position as a king is to protect my people, is to protect them from harassment, from arrest, and whatever I can do to protect them, simply saying to the occupying nation that they have no authority, that this is our land, this is our home, it is not yours. We live here. Our ancestors developed these lands. Our ancestors gave this land, this legacy, to continue to perpetuate this land in righteousness and the things that make up the Hawaiian Islands, make up its people. And I thank you for the question. It's dear to my heart because Hawaii is actually a place where all nations of the world love to come, not because of its paradisical looks, but because of its people. And there's nobody on earth here in Hawaii that can represent the Hawaiian Islands better than the Hawaiians themselves.
For that. First of all, I just want to make an announcement for people who are listening that we are involved in a discussion with the Ali Nui Moi, which is the High Chief of King of the Kingdom of Hawaii. And we are talking about the struggle of the Hawaiian people to become independent and free again. In the moment, we'll open up the phone lines, but our number here for those who want to join this discussion is 727-565-1599. Or we can be joined on Skype at Uhuru Radio. That's U-H-U-R-U, Radio. Or we can be contacted at djuhururadio.com for those of you who might want to participate via email. So I wanted to thank the Ali Nui Moi for that elaboration on some of the questions surrounding this relationship that the U.S. has to Hawaii. I think there's much more that people will be interested in and that I hope to draw out. But I do question whether or not Grover Cleveland was, you know, had good intentions as what was suggested. I know that this was, we'll be talking about 1903 when,
yes,
when the queen was overthrown and the people of Hawaii turned into colonial subjects as opposed to the free nation that existed prior to then. But I'm just thinking about that whole time frame. I know that it was 1884 and 85 that the Europeans got together and partitioned Africa and gave different parts of Africa to different colonial powers. It was 1898 that the U.S., after the so-called Spanish-American War, captured Puerto Rico, Guam, Cuba, the Philippines, and various other territories. And then just a few short years after that, we see in 1903 the capture of Hawaii. And by 1915, we see a situation where France has carved up what we now call the Middle East and created the borders and things there. And in every instance, it seems like what we're looking at, the process of accumulation of capital and resources by Europe at the expense of other peoples. And Hawaii seems to fall into that category. It just seems, yes, to me that what happened to Hawaii was not extremely different from what was happening to everybody else around the world, and that gave the power and strength to the United States and Europe at our expense. And at least that's how we interpret these facts. I mean, if we took what happened in Hawaii in isolation, we may be able to say that it has something to do with bad choices made by the ones who followed Cleveland into office, but it looks like it was a part of a pattern that was happening throughout the world.
I'd like to weigh in briefly here. The Queen, my cousin, Lili O'Klein, did not give the Kingdom of Hawaii away willingly.
Right.
She was forced. She was forced into vacating the throne.
Yes.
She wanted to prevent bloodshed because the U.S. military, Marines, were pointing their rifles, their weapons against the people. And she, being who she is, stood between the rifles and the people,
yes,
and saying, "A'ole, no, I will not have you kill my people, and my people will not fight you back. I will abdicate my throne temporarily, believing that your president, your enlightened government, the United States, will restore me back to the position of queen." Well, in the memoirs of Queen Liliuokalani, I've read where she really believed that Grover Cleveland was her friend.
Mm.
And as her friend, she relied upon that friendship and that he would work with her. And some of the researches that I've been able to gather and from others, it does show that he was there to work with the queen at that time. As far as his intention to his heart, I cannot judge that. I can only go from what I've read, and unfortunately, we make assumptions based on the things that we see, knowing that history in itself has been tainted simply because when someone writes a history book, they're talking about their historical events and how they perceive things, and they can word it any way they see that will benefit them.
Yes.
So the history of Hawaii, again, was because of its natural resources, because of the volcanoes we have, the rich soil, and the fact that the people here in Hawaii themselves were just people that understood our culture and tradition, our land.
Yes.
They were not the type of people that went out and shot up anybody or caused war. It was not who they were.
Yes.
Anyway, when you talk about France and you talk about other Western countries and coming in and taking part of Africa and so forth and so on, again, I believe there is a similarity that you pointed out with us and them. Again, colonialism, everything was to divide and conquer, to make that nation stronger, and everything was strategic. It's unfortunate that how people go around the world simply because they think back then that they can take what is not theirs. And today, myself and my Ali Manaunui and many others here in Hawaii and around the world are bringing to light that injustices. And that light is shining on those darkness, because today the effort of restoring the kingdom is going very well, and the respect of the kingdom is now growing even deeper. And so the good things are happening for us. Slow, but it's happening.
Can you tell us what will the restoration of the kingdom look like for the people of Hawaii? Hawaii, as you just mentioned, functions in many ways as a military installation bases for the U.S. The Hawaiian people, yourselves, have your land and resources expropriated. The economy is essentially owned by outsiders. What will the restoration of the kingdom mean for the people of Hawaii?
No, thank you. That's a very good question. According to international law and laws of nations, we must restore the kingdom back to where it once before, and that's a monarchical government. We had a monarchical constitution at the time prior to the overthrow of the King of Hawaii. And a lot of people have not been governed by a monarchical government. All they know is the government that now overshadows the Kingdom of Hawaii, which is the United States. And what this means is that as we become more and more independent, we become more strong, we then develop the government according to the people, because it is my desire that once the kingdom is restored, to open up the forums, if you will, to the people, and to have them decide the type of government they feel will best serve their needs. It is my sacred duty to restore the kingdom back to where it was. I not only have the Hawaiian blood, I'm 75% Hawaiian, but I also have the royal genealogy, the Naupio line, which is a sacred line. And the sacred line is the highest line, and that is that sacredness that compels me to restore this nation back to where it was, and to to that end, once that is restored, then we will open the forum.